Good morning, Josh Mogerman from NRDC.
Good morning.
It's good to have you back.
It's great to be here.
So you are, all right. Give me your trees versus fake trees.
No, I don't want to step on your guests later. So we'll wait on that. But obviously, from a carbon perspective, there's real value in having a new crop of trees being grown on an annual basis for this. You know, in terms of maintaining a carbon sink, there's real value from that. And you know, we're in dire straits as it comes to climate issues, and every little bit helps. So yeah, from that perspective, it's really helpful.
Yeah, if you can at all do it, get a tree that was organically grown and didn't use synthetic pesticides and synthetic fertilizers, for that matter. The next best, all right, just get a live tree. And if you can get one, you know, chop it down yourself, so then it's... You know, I don't know if those tree farms ship stuff. You know, you wonder what happens to all the extras. Obviously, you hope they're ground up. But too many trees end up in alleyways, and you would hope that when they pick up refuse, they throw those aside and grind them up and turn them into mulch. I mean, you can do that specifically at the end of the season. Most municipalities will, as certainly City of Chicago does, has a program where you take your tree and they chop it up for you. But the live tree is so much better than the fake one. And I actually I remembered this morning as I was coming in, Josh, to post the link that I found at the NRDC, Natural Resources Defense Council, site, where you guys put together a page about... It's called The Tree Choice, Care and Decorating Tips for the Holidays. So it talks about cut trees and live trees and wreaths and lights and decorations and recycling and all that good stuff. So, but again, I don't want to spoil it for our guest later on. But Josh is here because we have been communicating. And I have to admit, things come up and I want to cover every single environmental issue that comes up, and I find sometimes whole show goes by and I haven't really talked about it. So then I have to make up for it by bringing Josh down here so that he can whoop me upside the head with a rolled-up newspaper.
A recycled rolled-up newspaper.
And one of those issues – all right, there's two. You want to start with Keystone or do you want to start with Great Lakes water quality?
Your choice. Let's make sure to talk clean coal too.
And clean coal, yeah.
Isn't that an oxymoron, clean coal?
Let's start there.
All right,
because we are in the suspended veto session in Springfield right now. The veto session started. Now they've gone home for the holidays. It's going to come back. But in the first part of the veto session, a very bad thing happened as far as I'm concerned, which is the Senate voted to approve a coal plant. Tenaska, tell me about that.
It's the Taylorville Energy Center. It's being billed as a clean coal plant, despite the fact that if this thing gets built, it will be one of the state of Illinois' top 10 carbon emitters. But I think probably more importantly, and something that I think everyone who's listening should be aware of, because this will affect every person in the state of Illinois, this is another General Assembly boondoggle. It's another kind of playing favorites thing where the General Assembly has a bill that will not only allow this thing to be built outside of the normal regulatory process, but more importantly, they're being given a sweetheart deal that guarantees them profits for the next 30 years. And that profit obviously will come from you and me and local governments and businesses. It's a guaranteed revenue stream.
How does that happen? How is it that the average citizen, the citizens of Illinois, get sold down the river? I mean, didn't we go through this in Chicago with the parking meter deal where we're locked in for 75 years? Now we're locking in for 30 years to a company that is just going to pollute? And how is it that, as you say, they're talking about clean coal? All right, stop right there. Heather, Josh, let's repeat this together, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There is no such thing as clean coal.
There is no such thing as clean coal.
There is no such thing as clean coal. One more time.
And you'll get it in your stocking if you're naughty.
Yeah, it's just like, you said it's going to be even more polluting. Why is it? Where's the technology? Where's the clean coal part of? Where's the clean part of this?
Well, as you said, there's no such thing as clean coal. This thing is this is a more advanced plant. It's a IGCC plant, which is supposed to create a cleaner stream. And I haven't seen the numbers for their sulfur and a lot of the other very harmful things that come out of your typical coal plant. But from a carbon perspective, this plant would be an 800 megawatt plant that actually will knock a 600 megawatt plant out of the top 10 list, the Waukegan plant that many of your listeners have probably seen and know is not state of the art. It's a smaller plant that is actually cleaner from a carbon perspective, which is massively frustrating. This new one comes with a $5.7 billion price tag, and you and I are going to be paying for that for more than a generation.
Who wins here? Who's the politicians who are getting their pockets greased or hands palms greased by the coal industry? Who wins? I mean, I assume that the coal industry would say jobs. I'm sure at the end of this someplace is somebody saying jobs.
You know, we've heard that over and over, and this is a question that everyone listening needs to be asking their representatives in Springfield, because this is not the first coal plant that this General Assembly has pushed forward. Let's not forget that earlier in the year there was the discussion over the Leucadia plant, which would create artificial natural gas out of coal. And it has the same kind of sweetheart deal, forcing utilities to buy this at an elevated rate that you and I will pay for. And that was the call. It was, hey, there's 1,000 jobs on the southeast side of Chicago, even though those numbers look to be far from rock solid.
And what's the status of that at the moment?
That passed. The General Assembly gave them a sweetheart deal. So
Now, here's what I've heard. My sources tell me that the governor accepted that because he believes the EPA won't approve it, so that he can play both sides, which is to say he looks like he's a jobs guy because the thing got passed, but he knows that the EPA will never approve it, so it won't get built in southeast Chicago. Have you heard that?
Well, it relies on some leftover pollution permits from a previous owner of the lot, and that seems to be patently irregular, if not illegal. And there are questions about whether this thing will move forward. But I think the question that we need to be asking our representatives in Springfield is, what are you there for, and who are you looking out for? We've had this go through in terms of dirty energy projects. We've had the Leucadia thing go through. We've now had the Tenasca thing pass the Senate. It still has to be approved by the House. We had a similar big power holdings facility for downstate, and we had even though there were some very, very good parts of the ComEd bill, we had that go through. There are real questions about why the General Assembly is stepping in and usurping the normal regulatory process for really, really difficult, really, really expensive and important energy issues that are going to be affecting the state for decades to come. I mean, we're talking more than a generation, these decisions that are being undertaken, you know, really quickly. People are given an hour to vote on these things.
Yeah, and one of the things I am beginning to understand late in life is that on a national level, people tend to understand the issues because they get hammered again and again and again in the national press. On a local level, you tend to understand the issues because it affects you locally, whether it's city of Chicago or whatever municipality you're in. Where the gap is the state level. I don't think people really follow the legislature. They certainly, you know, Springfield seems like it's far away. And these decisions are made, and then suddenly we have these stupid laws that have been passed, and we say, well, how did that happen? Well, guess what? You weren't paying attention, and the media weren't paying attention. A lot of people, and often when I'm researching things from this show, I will go online and try to look up the issue, and so I can put a link or two on my website. Often, I find that Trib's not covering it, Sun-Times not covering it. Some downstate newspaper in Peoria or Carbondale has got a story about this issue that I think is really important and people in the city of Chicago should know about. but it's not there. I can't find – and do you find the same thing, Josh?
Yeah. Well, you know, the Trib and the Sun-Times have people in Springfield. They have a Springfield bureau, but it's a person. And so more often than not, these issues – in the case of the Tribune, there is a reporter, Julie Wernow, who is in the business pages, and she goes down to Springfield as often as she can. I talk to her from time to time, and she does a good job keeping on top of this. But it is harder and harder to rely on cash-strapped major media organizations to follow this stuff. They just don't have the resources to be down there and following every issue that's at play in Springfield all the time.
So how does this get covered? So how do people know? I mean, obviously, you guys cover it to some degree. One of the ways these issues get covered in the 21st century are the e-blasts that you get from various organizations. But I can tell you, being a guy who gets a lot of e-blasts, they start to blur. You know, they all run together and everything is just as important as the next. Everything isn't urgent. You got to sign this petition, send us money. And then you begin to tune out. How do we, you know, it's and the responsibility just gets, it seems harder and harder. And I mean your responsibility as a citizen. The citizen to pay attention, to know what's going on. So, as you said, the Senate, state Senate, we're talking here, has passed this Tenasca so-called clean coal bill, which is not clean coal. Ladies and gentlemen, there is no such thing as clean coal. I'm going to keep saying that. I'm just going to keep saying that until it soaks in, until it sinks into your heads. But the House has still to vote on it. And I was happy to say I had a friend. And Heather, I'm going to see if I can find this. Which somebody sent me a list of the link to who voted on this. And thank goodness my senator voted no. Yay, Delgado! Yay, good for you, Mr. Delgado. I'm glad you voted no. And I'm going to call my state rep and say, vote no, because this is our last chance. Is there any chance that Governor Quinn will veto this?
I think it's really hard to tell at this point. I think our best bet is twofold, is to reach out to our representatives and let them know that this is an issue that concerns us. And, hey, I doubt you have a lot of listeners that don't believe in climate change and are big, strong coal backers, and that's fine. There's plenty of things to really despise about this bill. This sort of sweetheart arrangement that guarantees profit for 30 years is unacceptable and not something that you see on a national scale. And that's not the way to operate an energy sector. That's the way Illinois operates an energy sector. And it kind of gets to the heart of some of the problems that we have in this state.
You know, and I was just looking at the person had sent me the link to how your state senator voted. It's listed on Faith in Place.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting,
mm-hmm.
Heather? Well, did you know that? Did you find that? Because I'm going to show. I want you to put this up here, if you can, Heather. If we can get the list, so people can see how their state senator voted. All right. I need to take a short break. When we come back, Keystone,
great
XL, and Great Lakes water quality. That's Josh Mogerman. All right. Let's talk Keystone. That's the pipeline that's going to bring all that lovely tar sands oil from Canada to Texas. I was reading an article that you sent me about that. And there again, the argument is it's going to create all these jobs. And one of the things that you have informed me of is that, no, it's not really. That's the hype, isn't it?
It's massively frustrating. You're going to be hearing a lot more about that because the Republicans in the House have attached a bill to the payroll tax preservation effort that would move this pipeline forward. And even I think just yesterday, Representative Boehner in his speech said that this would create tens of thousands of jobs, and that's fundamentally untrue. It's been shown from study after study, and even the company that's building the pipeline says we're talking about hundreds of permanent jobs, and most estimates from folks that are not engaged with the industry are saying somewhere under 5,000 jobs total, and that is not worth the price that this pipeline is going to inflict.
And what is the environmental price? You've been on the show, and we've talked about tar sands oil before, and
yep.
Part of the reason it's so bad is the process of extracting it is just ruining the boreal forest in Canada.
Yeah, it's a double whammy. This is a form of petroleum bitumen, which is the most carbon intensive oil on the planet, the dirtiest oil on the planet. And beyond the fact that you're creating more greenhouse gases by burning this, you're also eliminating one of the largest carbon sinks in the world by cutting down the boreal forest, which is a big chunk of northern Canada.
Why haven't the Canadians risen up against this?
Well, you know, interestingly, the boogeyman in all of this that we hear from the people pushing the pipeline is, if we don't use this stuff, the Chinese are going to do it. And what they point to is a pipeline project that is being proposed to move to the British Columbia coast. And just this week, we've gotten really good news. The regulators in Canada made basically the same choice as the president has done. They've put it off for a year over concerns related to safety and climate. And so this stuff is currently landlocked. It's not going anywhere. But we need to make sure that our representatives know that we're paying attention to this, because really this pipeline isn't about jobs and it's not about energy security. It's about big oil profits. It's about getting this stuff to international markets where they can get a much prettier penny for it. Right now, they're forced to sell their oil at a discount because of some infrastructure bottlenecks. And this pipeline is solely about that. It's about big oil profits. Just a couple years after Exxon posted the largest profit in American corporate history.
And
world corporate history, actually. Sorry.
Okay. There you go. And another myth is that, well, this is oil for the United States, but it's going to go down to Texas, and then it's going to go all over the world. So it's not just our oil. It's going to despoil. I guess the part of the problem, the question is, where the pipeline goes is aquifer territory out west, and could despoil the aquifers there.
Yeah, there's real concerns about the Oglala Aquifer, which is one of the key resources for American agriculture. We're talking about a huge percentage of American crops that are irrigated by this aquifer, which is uniquely vulnerable to a pipeline moving through it because it is water that's right there near the surface. And as we've mentioned before, this is a particularly dangerous type of oil that has much higher heavy metal content and benzene and an array of other really nasty things that are you generally wouldn't want in your water, nor would you want in the water that irrigates your crops.
And now it's going to be used as a bargaining chip in the negotiations in Washington over the tax deal, the holiday, which Mr. Obama wants to extend for another year. And I have issues with in the first place, because I think it's a slippery slope that could lead to the destruction of funding for Social Security. But the Republicans are going to want to throw in this pipeline like, no big deal. We need to bargain. Let's throw in this really, really destructive, dangerous pipeline so that you can get yours. And given the way the Democrats work in Washington, I fully expect them to cave and say, okay, yeah, we'll give you the pipeline.
We've heard all the right things from people in Congress and from the White House, but you know, frankly, this is part of the playbook. We saw this last year with wolves being eliminated from the endangered species list. That is something that there wasn't a vote on. Instead, it was stuck in a financial bill and a must-pass bill. And you know, if you care about environmental issues, you need to be watching this debate right now, because this is very much a part of the same issues that you and I have talked about before in terms of attacks on the Clean Air Act, attacks on the EPA's ability to protect public health and our natural resources. This is a very, very dangerous precedent.
Let's take a quick phone call. Bob is in Rogers Park. Hi, Bob. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Good morning, kids. I may have heard too slowly you were talking pipeline, and I was going to chime in with the issue of fracking and sands and nothing.
Might as well, because that, you know, that's kind of part and parcel of this. It's all this dangerous stuff that's going to pollute our water.
Nothing says the holidays like fracking, and I hear a new sand mine was about to be created just east of Starved Rock State Park, some organization called Mississippi Sand of some sort. Right now, the U.S. Silica facility out there is kicking major butt, working 24/7, digging out sand. But this new facility is going to be built where it's 100% for fracking procedures and not just for railroad breaks and comet cleansers and makeup and all the thousands of other uses this wonderful sand has. And I wonder if there's any way to shake the bushes and say, you're going to trash Starved Rock State Park and turn it into a pick your nasty suburb phrase here.
Yeah. You know anything about this, Josh?
Well, you know, it's an interesting issue that is unfortunately not unique to Starved Rock. If you look all around the Great Lakes, there has been this issue of increased sand mining, particularly in Wisconsin and a little bit in, I believe, Michigan. And there's a lot of people looking at this trying to figure out what the environmental impacts are. And if there are issues to challenge these, I mean, we'll have to see that as fracking and the natural gas boom has expanded, this has become very, very big business. It's not on the radar. And so I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done to really understand what's going on.
Ain't that the truth? Good luck to us all.
Yeah, really. Well, the good luck to us all, Bob, is paying attention, as Josh says.
Absolutely.
And I said earlier, it's like if we stop paying attention, because and it really, to get on my soapbox for a second, it really makes me angry, and I mean truly angry, when the broadcast networks and the cable networks spend 95% of their time on these crazy Republican debates, and who cares, who gives a rip, because these guys are idiots, and then we have all the other issues of the world that get squeezed in, or not mentioned at all, and you know, the whole Republican debate thing and all politics, and not just the Republicans, because in the Democratic years, it's their debates. And this is the dog and pony shows. And we're not paying attention. And I blame all of them, CNN and MSNBC. And, well, I don't watch Fox.
Absolutely. And when did the Republican Party become a comedy troupe? I missed that completely. Only need one network to follow that, and WCPT is my pipeline to reason and information.
And that's why we're here, and I'm so glad you listened. Thanks for calling in, Bob.
Be well.
Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM, and Santo, the bus driver's got a quick question about the pipeline. How you doing, Santo?
Life is good.
Great. And what have you got for us here?
Well, talking about the pipelines and talking about the coal and talking about all this pollution. I read I think it was last year, Peabody Coal Company, I think, is taking a big chunk out of the Ogallala Aquifer to pump ground up coal. And they pump it through a pipeline for a couple hundred miles, and they use the water, pure water, to push this coal through the pipeline to deposit it who knows how many hundreds of miles away. What does this your guest know about all that?
You know anything there?
I actually don't know anything about that. That's something we'll have to look at. I think what's interesting with the Keystone XL pipeline is, you know, people have been sitting on the sidelines ready to do something related to climate for years now, since the failed effort on the climate bill. And unfortunately, we can't roll back time. We're not able to eliminate some of the real dirty projects that are a problem right now. What we are able to do is stop the really ugly new ones and buy ourselves a little bit of time as we're trying to deal with climate change. And that's really, I think, what the Keystone XL fight is about.
Thanks a lot, Santo. I got to run. We got lots going on here. All right. And before we bring in Dave, who's got some interesting information about Christmas trees, and before this question, apparently I had a woman call into Heather, and she's really unhappy because she thinks I called her an idiot for not having a computer. I didn't say people were idiots. I'm just surprised that people don't have computers. You don't have to listen to the show if you don't like that opinion. I just don't get it if people don't have computers in the 21st century.
Some people don't want them. Some people want to be off the grid.
Okay.
I understand that.
Okay.
But yeah, don't anger the listeners who want to keep it old school, okay? They still have their radios, they tune in, they listen. Don't make them mad.
Okay, I'm sorry if I made you mad. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't call you an idiot. I just said. And she said she was going to cancel her subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Oh, dear.
You got her mad.
I know I did. Okay.
Don't anger the listeners. They're our bread and butter.
And clean Great Lakes, Josh. There are new regulations being proposed for ballast being emptied into the Great Lakes. And as we know, a lot of the invasives have come into the Great Lakes through the ballast of ships, like zebra mussels and quagga mussels, and what's the goby?
Round gobies.
Round gobies.
Now the most numerous fish in Lake Michigan.
Really?
Yeah.
And wiping out habitat for all the... I mean, are the Great Lakes doomed?
They're certainly on a downward trajectory, but there's a lot that we can and should be doing to look after them. In Lake Michigan, we have an ecosystem that's been fundamentally changed by quagga mussels, like you mentioned, that have, you know, the idea of a clear lake sounds really good, but a healthy lake is a murky lake. And quagga mussels, which there are now more quagga mussels in the Great Lakes than there are fish in all of the seas in the world combined.
Get out, really?
Yeah, this is an invasion that I think is unprecedented and also very much not on people's radar. Apparently, if you could walk a mile underneath Lake Michigan, you could walk on a bed of quagga mussels from Wisconsin to Michigan.
Oh, my goodness.
They've just coated and so they are filter feeders. They've filtered out much of the plankton and microscopic life in Lake Michigan. And so as a result, sunlight can pierce all the way to the bottom of the lake. It grows algae. That algae creates conditions that are likely not particularly healthy to people like us, people in general, because it promotes the growth of E. coli and other dangerous toxins. So we need to be watching this really closely. Just like we were talking about with Keystone XL, we can't roll back time. We can't roll back time with the problems we have in the Great Lakes right now, but we can slam the door on new invasive species coming in and making things worse. And that's what these ballast water regulations should be doing. Unfortunately, they're not quite as stringent as we would like, but they're a good first step. It's forcing...
So it's not horrible. They're not really awful...
Well, you know, this is an iterative process, and so we're starting by putting in standards that can be ratcheted up. But certainly, most of the environmental groups that are paying attention to this in the Great Lakes community, and there are lots of them, are pushing for stricter standards, and the shipping industry is pushing back, and we'll see where that goes.
And I'm going to have Heather post this. We're posting lots of articles today on Facebook because it's just I can't get to all of this. NRDC's On Earth website had a really fascinating and disturbing article called Lake Erie Death Watch. And Lake Erie will be the first one to go because it's the shallowest of the Great Lakes.
It is.
And it was a success story in the 70s and 80s. And now we're reversing course and we're going to kill the lake. And it's we'll post this. And Heather, when you get a chance, take a look at that and add that to the Mike Novak Show on Facebook so people can read what it really means when these things are attacking the lake, invasive species. Let's go real quick to line two. I'm still trying to cram a lot of stuff in this show today. Bring in Dave Zaber. Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm good, Mike. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Dave wrote to me after last week's show because I mentioned creosote in your fireplace from burning Christmas trees. You had a lot more to add than to that. First of all, you're an environmental
toxicologist and ecotoxicology background.
Yeah, a consultant, do a lot of that sort of thing. And what did you sort of reiterate what you told me in the email you sent me?
Well, Mike, first of all, again, thanks for having me, and I've been really enjoying the program as usual. And last week when you were talking about Christmas trees and disposing of them, the issue came up of burning them, and you had mentioned some reasons why not to do that, the accumulation of creosote, things like that. And I wanted your listeners to know that, you know, there's other reasons as well not to do that, and one of them is the use of pesticides, particularly insecticides, on Christmas trees. Many of these chemicals last for months. Some are systemic. They're absorbed into the actual tree. And burning those can release a host of not only amounts of the parent product, the actual chemical itself, but all sorts of things that are created when you partially burn chemicals. And that poses a risk to consumers, and that's one of the reasons I had written to you.
And some of the things you were talking about are organophosphates, and now are they nicotinoids? But are these used on Christmas trees?
Well, there are. There's a couple dozen chemicals, insecticides and herbicides, and miticides, fungicides, things that kill all those pests that are used on Christmas trees, but not all of them. And there's some good news. Number one, the trend is for some declines in the use of particularly the insecticides on trees, but a significant proportion is still used for a variety of reasons. Some of these are very toxic chemicals, particularly things like endosulfan or dimethylwait. These are endosulfans and organochlorine insecticide. Dimethylwait is organophosphate. These are neurotoxins and, very acutely toxic as well as long-lasting. And those are the things that, even if you've got 5-10% of the chemical left on that tree, burning that and coming into contact with that for a prolonged period of time can be a problem. So not to say don't buy live Christmas trees. I think they are, not only from the carbon standpoint, but from a whole host of other standpoints, much more ecologically friendly than baked trees.
But now, you're talking about burning. What about just coming into contact with these chemicals that, might have a residue on the tree?
Well, unfortunately, some of these trees can be sprayed up until the point of harvest. And something like endosulfan can last even on an applicator's hand after washing for, several weeks. So they do last, and some of them do persist for a long period of time. In fact, some of these neonicotinoids, the ones that act on the nicotinic nervous system in the body.
And let's neonicotinoid, like it sounds, it's tobacco. It's or related to the chemical, right?
Well, it's what it is. It's related to a mode of action which affects a certain component of the human of the nervous system, and not only humans but other animals, obviously insects.
Yeah.
Extremely toxic to bees. Extremely toxic to aquatic life. So, so you want to be careful. You don't want to get in contact with those to the extent possible. So there's a lot of things you can do. Make sure you're vacuuming those needles up and shaking them off. The preference would be organic trees. The next preference would be no spray, although they're not certified organic.
So you're saying that if they use a systemic that goes into the roots, it's less toxic?
Well, not necessarily. Dimethylwait is a systemic, and disistan, another organophosphate. These are taken up, and they last for a prolonged period of time. So burning, again, can release not only the parent product, the original insecticide chemical, but breakdown products and products of incomplete combustion.
Hey, we got to be scaring the heck out of people here just on Christmas trees.
Well, let's not. And that's a very important point. I have a live balsam fir in my house right now. I just pulled it in. Wisconsin, Michigan, two of the largest top five Christmas tree producing states in the country. Significant reductions in the use of many of these chemicals for whatever reason, regulations to phase out certain highly toxic ones, the cost, these are expensive chemicals, and the preference to start to go to a no-spray organic regime because consumers are demanding those. But there's also some other reasons that they're using insecticides. One, to be certified for gypsy moths and to export Christmas trees, you got to spray them. So there's a federal regulatory incentive to continue on the pesticide treadmill rather than pushing to look at alternative methods. And there's lots of people using them throughout the upper Midwest where they're not using the sprays at nearly the level or concentration that they used to be, or eliminating them altogether.
Wow. This is Josh. Josh is just sitting there nodding. You guys ought to hook up. I ought to get you in touch with Dave here.
I will say that I know a couple of the folks that are the Chicago NRDC office. We usually had worked together in the past on protecting our national forests, another tree issue. But you know, let me again reiterate real quick, Mike. Live Christmas trees is a really useful and potentially lucrative way to keep lands in agricultural use that may be pressured to go into suburban use or what have you. And there's ways to do it where you can make money and sell a good product. There's a guy up in Minneapolis who's going up and cutting out small balsam fir on his own property as a restoration technique, and then bringing those trees back down to Minneapolis and selling them. They may not be the kind you see in the at the local gas station where everything looks perfectly and they're dyed, but they're beautiful, fresh, organic trees that are helping to fund restoration in the North Woods.
That's a good way to end it on a positive note. Dave Zaber, you and I are going to talk again in the future. You seem to be a font of information, and I'm glad you listened to the show, and I'm glad you wrote me. Just fascinating stuff. A little disturbing, but no reason to panic, right?
Sometimes Christmas can be a little scary, but we all love it. So, thanks so much, Mike, for having me, and I really enjoyed the program.
All right, thanks, Dave. We'll talk to you later. The Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk. I got to get to Pat Stone, Josh Mogerman, NRDC. Thank you for dropping by. You're not here often enough. I need to have you here more often because there's so much going on, and I got a feeling maybe we'll do this again in January and catch up on some of the other issues that are happening here.
That'd be great. It's always fun. Thanks.
All right.